Hardcore Junkies.
What's going on, golf addicts? Welcome to the Bump and Run episode 12. Pretty sure. I'm DB, Tour Junkies. Pat with me. Producer Tony with me. As always, Bump and Run, we appreciate you guys checking it out. It's where we don't talk about DFS and gambling and handicapping and stats and blah, 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 blah. We don't talk about all that. We get to talk about regular golf stuff. We get to do weird stuff and maybe talk about something different. So we're excited about it. Hope you are too. Got a good show in store for you today. Producer Tony, what's on the docket today?
Yeah, we talk about making our own beef jerky, going on riverboat gambling trips, shitting with the door open.
Mm-hmm.
You know, man,
I do all three of those things. I love all three.
Yeah, same.
Yeah, good stuff today, fellas. Only three topics, but I think a lot of discussion can come from these. So we'll get right into it. We'll go with the never-ending drama, it seems like, surrounding Rory McIlroy and him on the PGA Tour policy board, PGA Tour Enterprises, PIFs, the Saudis. It's just never-ending, guys. It reminds me of the Michael Scott gif, snip, snap, snip, snap, snoop, when he gets the vasectomy and then Jan wants it reversed. It's just back and forth, back and forth. So,
is Jan one of the more just underrated kind of cougars in all of Pat, are you okay over there?
you kind of got me excited
escalated quickly.
Yeah,
dang. I don't know if you strike the chord there, but
I was, you know what's funny, like, it's, I guess, you know, when you're watching social things, just pop up all the AI stuff, the algorithms. Now all this stuff is popping up that they're going to do a potential reboot of The Office. Have you heard about that?
No.
There's some talk because I think Michael Scott or Steve Carell was on Saturday Night Live recently to promote something, and they were all like, he had all the, they were all the cast members when he was doing his opening monologue, and they were asking him about rebooting the show. I don't know. Maybe not. Anyway, that's not golf related.
I think, Pat, because I saw that headline the other day, and this may just be a classic, someone reads the headline, but not the article. I think it's going to be like a sequel. It's not the original cast and in Scranton. It's like the documentary film crew from The Office goes to a different town. They film, I think it said they're going to do like a Midwest newspaper and then follow the hijinks of The Office in a... From a newspaper standpoint,
if the headline would have had anything involving Jan, Pat would have read the whole article.
Yeah, I would have.
He did not decide to read the whole
or a picture.
Pat, okay, Jan or Kitty Cat from Wedding Crashers?
Oh, now I'm a Jane Seymour all day long. Jane Seymour, for sure. I'll put her above.
God, you're old.
Come on, dude. Man. She's not just the medicine woman.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you say Jane Seymour over Jan?
Mm-hmm.
What about Jane Seymour versus what was that list? Suzanne Somers.
No, oh, Jane Seymour. Jane Seymour.
Suzanne Somers in her prime when she was doing the Thighmaster thing?
Well, I mean, you didn't specify, but I mean, I kind of think of Jane Seymour as like this is Cougar versus like Cougar.
Ageless.
It needs to be like Cougar versus Cougar.
Okay. What about Jane versus Lisa Ann? Dude,
I would say Jane. Jane would be like,
oh my God.
Yeah. There's an attainability factor that has to go into this. Neither attainable, but like one, like Jane, if you attain that, you are like, I mean, come on. There's not a whole lot of people that have gotten to that point.
Hmm.
Anyway, we went off the rails.
Was that topic one?
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Next topic, fellas. Rory on the PGA Tour policy board. So it came out yesterday that he is actually not going back to the PGA policy tour board and PGA Tour Enterprises. I'm definitely going to mix those up at some point and fumble my words. A good article from Golf Digest, Joel Beal over there laid out some of the questions that people may have. Apparently, Patrick Cantlay, Tiger, and Jordan Spieth have some issues with Rory coming back to the board. So Pat, I want to throw you this out. I want to throw this out to you first. Given everything that we know, just what the PGA Tour Policy Board does, the involvement now with the Saudis, trying to get this piff deal done, and just getting the game of golf back together, not fractured, all of that stuff kind of factored in. Do you think that Rory is a good fit and his voice holds a lot of weight given all this stuff of going, he was on it, now he's off, on it again, wants to come back, now he's off again. Do you think he's a good fit on there for making decisions for the sport?
I didn't think you were going to ask me that question, but yeah, I don't see, this is why we went off on a tangent to start the show. I'm so tired of all this stuff. Anyway, I'm a Rory fan and I'm tired of Rory. I'm so tired of it. And I think that's a good question. I think he's probably fit, but I don't know. Like, he's so torn in all these different directions, and he's so polarizing these days that maybe he's not a good fit. You know, like, maybe they need a new voice in there. Like, now, is he qualified? Absolutely. I mean, he's 100% qualified to help make decisions. But I just don't think that at this point, if there is some fracture even within the PGA Tour side, not, you know, throughout LIV and everything, then you need to remove a lot of those barriers and just get the people in. I think Patrick Cantlay's terrible too. I don't want Patrick Cantlay making a bunch of decisions. And the other thing is, why do we care about this board so much? I don't even know. Is there a board for the NFL? I mean, I know there's the NFL Players Association, but they're kind of like the voice against the owners, maybe, or like just like the voice for the players, I guess, not against the owners. But I don't know any other boards that we care, like who's on the board and who's off the board. I don't care. So I guess I say all that to say I'm tired of hearing about it. But I'll say this about that article that was kind of funny to me. The rift between Jordan and maybe Tiger, I don't know, started because Rory left a conversation. Which I thought was hilarious. He left the conversation of a text group, and that's part of what caused like an hour, 2 hour long conversation that Jordan and Rory had. And you know how, like, when you're on a text group and, like, all of a sudden somebody leaves it and, like, it's been, a long text group and you're like, uh-oh, what's going on here? They left the conversation.
One buddy gets designated to go talk him back in or something.
Yeah, talk him back in. I've done that. I've left a conversation. I had to get back in. I got back in. But I just thought that was funny. Like, that started a whole deal between freaking Rory and Jordan that spilled over into the Players Championship when they played together, according to the article.
This is just another reason why people are tired of this whole freaking thing. It's just so annoying. But I think the reason why, Pat, the reason why I think the board matters is because now, more than ever, thank you to LIV, players actually have more power and have a louder voice in the direction of the PGA Tour. So if you would like for Jay Monahan to be basically judge, jury, and executioner of every decision made at the PGA Tour, him and his minions, then okay. But I don't think most people want that. So in the process of all this, the players have now become part owners. The players have been given new structure and a new seat at the table, and they have power, and they've been given more power than they've ever had thanks to competition. But the biggest voice of that group of players, which would be equivalent to like the NFL Players Union that you're talking about, are the players sitting on that board who are in the room with Jay and his minions and all the people in charge of these two, you know, the two sides of the PGA Tour. Ideally, as a fan of golf, ideally, we have players on there who can think outside of themselves, who have some sort of like acumen to like be in those rooms and make those decisions, who attempt to somewhat keep their finger on the pulse of what is going on and what is happening and what is being said by people that are golf fans and new golf fans and old golf fans and fans that have walked away and fans that are coming back. And like, so that that can be, so that that's all also kind of like a vessel for a fan voice in those meetings to determine where the tour is going to go. That's why I think it matters. We can't just throw up our hands and go, well, I don't care. Who cares?
No, like, see, this is like, you do this to me all the time. You say, Pat, when I tweeted something out and then you get all mad about it or something, or somebody else's tweet and I get mad and I'm not actually listening to the actual tweet, or maybe I didn't present myself in the right way. I don't know. I didn't say I don't care what the board does.
You said,
why do we even care about the board? All the things that you're saying are very obvious. Very obvious. What I'm saying is, I don't care. Let them do what they're doing. I can't control what that freaking board's doing. I have no say. I do care that they have the voice. I don't care about all the drama of Rory off and on and whatever else. That was my point. I get exactly what they're there for, and I think you're right. It's very important. But I'll just let them do their thing and not have to hear about it. That's what I'm saying by I don't care what's going on in that room. It's like the college football playoff committee. Like, I care what's going on. I want Georgia to get into the playoff, but I don't have any say so. So I'm just got to step away from it a little bit and be like, whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely not bogged down in it. And for Rory, you know, it's funny how this is all kind of, the tides are turning. Like, I'm actually kind of coming around on Rory a little bit. Like, I feel like he was the white knight out in front leading the charge while Jay was in his Biden bunker for the whole thing, except for the rare appearance where Jay would pop out and leverage 9/11 families. Rory was the one. Rory was sticking his neck out, dragging his balls across every freaking press conference every week, getting asked about it for so long, then got completely left out of whatever conversations Jay and Yasser were having, and learned on June 6th, an hour before we all did, of what was going on, felt completely betrayed, lied to, misled, everything. Yet, and definitely kind of backed off for a minute, said, okay, I'm going to focus on golf, like, but you know, but cares enough about the future of the tour and seems to actually be listening. We learned on Full Swing, he's a podcast listener. He listens to the Shotgun Start and No Laying Up. Those are two big golf podcasts that talk about this stuff on a weekly basis. He seems to have his finger on the pulse of the general, you know, the general consensus of golf fans that are frustrated with this and just want to see it resolved. And now he's chosen to say, you know what? I'll get back in the ring. I'll get back in. I'll fight the fight because I know it's got to get done. And now Tiger and Rory and Cantlay apparently don't want him back in, which is insane to me. Well, insane to me. Patrick Cantlay might be one of the worst people of all. Jay Monahan might be the whole reason this whole thing is getting thwarted.
I mean, people say Xander and Patrick are the disgusting brothers. Maybe Cantlay and Monahan are. I don't know. But I think you're – I mean, one thing, too, that's true about that, you know, when you look at Rory, is not just what he knows and what he can, you know, help with when it comes from the other players and everything. He seems to actually know the business side of things pretty well, too, which I think is important also. Like, what's actually going on between, you know, the whatever that organization and now the other, what is it?
PGA Tour.
Fenway, whatever.
SSG.
Yeah, whatever.
Fenway Group.
Yeah. SF, whatever. All of these different things. He tends to have a really good idea of what all's going on there, which I think is important too, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. God bless Rory now. I mean, like, seriously, like I'm kind of cheering him on. Like, and now he gets left out, and he's probably like, all right, cool. Well, I mean, less on my plate, I guess. You know, he's towards the back end of his career. You guys want to let the world burn and sit here and act like everything's fine while everything's, you know, insert dog gif with everything on fire. The PGA Tour is doing nothing. This thing continues to just burn away. Wells Fargo probably out after this week is being announced, I think. You know, they continue to lose sponsors. They continue to lose ratings. So, like, you guys want to sit here and just act like we can't do anything or we can keep it status quo. That's not true. But whatever, fine. I'll focus on winning majors. Now, that I'm not saying that I think he's going to win next week, but I'm starting to be more of a fan of Rory off the course.
I do find it interesting for the PGA Tour as a group and a enterprise that has been so secretive with things down to they wouldn't announce fines, they wouldn't announce suspensions, reasoning for that all this stuff is kind of trickling out now, especially over the last couple years. Just a little nugget that kind of sticks out to me. But fellas, moving on to the next topic. Y'all remember that show Pros versus Joes?
Love that show.
I think it was on Spike TV, wasn't it?
Great show.
Yeah.
It was a really good show. I thought a younger me thought he could definitely go on that show and show Michael Irvin what was up, but not anymore. So Phil Mickelson, ever the one to throw out some tweets. He had a tweet earlier that said he was thinking about doing something like this. He said, "I'm shooting to shoot some pros versus schmoes, 9-hole matches. I'll share insights throughout as well as a little smack talk. It won't be the highest quality video, but it will be fun for me to do and fun to watch, I think, too." To which Ian Poulter chimed in saying that he would be one of the schmoes to go up against Phil Mickelson. Now, I think a Phil versus Ian Poulter match style for made for TV match would do worse than the Lexi Homa Rory one. Yeah. No one would watch that. But I do think an interesting thing might be having a pro go up against a schmo, somebody with a 10 handicap, give them some shots. I think Riggs from Barstool did something similar to this with, he found a hater online and then played a match against him, which I just thought is an interesting concept. So DB, let me throw that out to you. I think something like that could work. I think it would be the perfect 15-minute, 20-minute YouTube video.
Yeah, but Pat doesn't watch YouTube golf, Tony. He would never watch this.
I don't like YouTube golf.
Having something like a 9-hole match, having something like an hour and a half, 2-hour Phil versus just, Tony LaBarbera, the 12 handicap, I don't think something like that could work. But if you could edit it down, I think maybe that has some legs. DB, what do you think?
Here's what I think would work, a slight tweak to that. Because we all think that there's a part of our small, dumb brains, if you play golf, that whatever your handicap is, when you're watching these guys play, like let's just take Quail Hollow. When you're watching these guys play Quail Hollow this week, and you're a 5 handicap, and you're thinking, okay, the average score was 74. I bet I could break 80, or maybe I could break 85 at Quail Hollow, playing from the same tees. I think it would be interesting to take different level handicappers. I think it would be very interesting to take a 0, like a scratch golfer, a 5, a 10, a 15, and they play with Phil, but they play the same golf course that for Phil, a live event is being held on the next day. Because that's always what I think is interesting, is like playing the exact same course, from the same Sunday tees, Sunday pins, same conditions, but the next day, like they do like Monday after Masters Media Day or whatever, except they all get to play for the members tees. But like for Phil, if they're playing, Trump Doral for Miami, and the next day he takes a 5 handicap and they play from the same tees that Phil played the day before, and you see how much more difficult it is in top-notch conditions, that would be really interesting to me. I would love for the PGA Tour to do that. Like every week, that would be a lot of fun every Monday to know that the tour is going to put out a 30-minute video chopped down with, random contest winner Pat, 10 handicap against whoever, Jake Knapp, right? Playing from the same tees, same conditions. What does he shoot? How does he handle it? And then you could really see how easy these guys make it look, and it ain't easy. I think that would be fun. But I mean, I'm up for Phil doing content anywhere. Like I like the Phil content.
Yeah, I do. I like the Phil content also. I think it would be fun to obviously play in something like that. I think that would be awesome. That'd be a lot of fun. And I could see the appeal to it, to watch it for sure on YouTube. I mean, especially if you had somebody like a Phil. Like, I don't, you know, DB kind of references because we got into this conversation last night. But, I mean, I don't really get a kick out of watching freaking Riggs play against an online hater. I think that, to me, now I get it. People are watching it. I get it. But Phil's a whole different story. Like, Phil against, you know, some schmoes, that to me has a little bit more entertainment value.
Dude, I would totally watch you play golf against a Pat hater. Like, I would love that. But obviously I have a connection, so.
Yeah, you have a connection.
But I think that's why it works. Riggs has built an audience. He's built people that either love him or hate him. I actually watched that video, and I don't watch foreplay videos, but I actually watched that video because I don't like Riggs. I think Riggs is a vanity handicap, which is why he gets chirped so much, because a lot of people agree.
Yeah.
And that guy chirped him and beat the brakes off of him, I think. I think he won like 2-1 or 3-1. I don't know.
I think the last – I've watched very few YouTube golf videos other than like the no lane up stuff, which I love, the travel stuff, those kind of things. I think they're awesome. But I watched like Joel Damon and Keith Mitchell do something with
They did Tito's thing with Harry.
They did the Tito's thing, and that was with like Fat Perez and all that. I watched that, but they're pros that I also think they're entertaining too in some way. And I watched Kiz in the Riggs thing. They did something. This was several years ago where it was like a match of maybe Kiz versus I did watch that because there's a connection with Kiz and he's a pro and all that. So those to me are a little more interesting, like you're kind of like what you're saying, Tony. Some of the other stuff I'm fine without, but I could definitely get behind Tiger for sure, but Phil in a pros versus schmoes type thing.
I could see the reverse being of what I said, like the reverse kind of being fun too, although you lose context with people who've never played. But like, I would love to play like with a pro from the tees I play from, you know, the course I play at, the tees I play from, see how they do it differently. You know, that could be fun too. But I think the more entertaining aspect would be the day after a tournament, you come back here and play where we played, same flag, same conditions, firm and fast or whatever it is. Good luck, and watch the 5 handicap shoot a 90.
I think getting into the mindset of a pro and even having just the accessibility of why he's hitting these shots, the time to be able to explain, okay, here I'm 220 out, I'm going to hit this club, here's the wind, blah, all that kind of stuff. And then also, the reverse where you've got a 10, 12, 5, you know, multiple handicaps or whatever it is. And then getting in their head as well. Whereas, you know, when I go up to a shot, I'm just like, I'm just trying to make good, clean contact, you know, but hitting on some of that kind of stuff throughout a 20-minute video. I mean, you could do like an old school, you know, what's the old run times for like a sitcom in the 90s? It's 22 minutes. Make it 22 minutes, you know, you add in your commercials and you put that on Golf Channel or whatever. Something just edited down where it's not an hour and a half, an hour of just this the same thing. You know, I feel like the editing down part is something that would be needed for it. So
for sure. Yeah.
Cool, fellas. All right, final topic here. We're going to go with snake draft. We like to do these to wrap up the show. So I wanted to throw this out, the connection with the PGA Championship next week out at Valhalla. It brings up one of Tiger's, I think, greatest moments, shots, putts, at the 2000 PGA Championship against Bob May, where he does the finger point as he's walking the putt in the playoff. So I wanted to throw this out. We could do three picks each. Some of his best shots and best moments that we'll each draft.
Okay.
Pat, who starts? Pat, let's have you start. DB, you can go second. Actually, I'll go second. Pat, you go third. Or DB, you go third.
All right. Well, I mean, I've got to go with 2005 Masters. I mean, 16. It's an iconic shot in the history of the game. So,
yeah,
that's obvious.
Also, one of the more iconic, poorly executed caddy fives after the shot.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
you know, one of those. It was kind of
rough. Can I have a hot take on that shot? I actually think that the moment and everything in the ball, like hanging on the lip and going in and all that kind of stuff. This is good. I don't think that shot was, if you're looking at all these shots, that was not the most difficult shot that he hit. Now, the moment was awesome, but yeah. Everything feeds right to that hole where he hit that from. It literally was not the most difficult golf shot to execute in my mind, but the moment and the way it was called and all that kind of stuff make it the one I would have to go with first.
It might be the most dramatic.
Yeah.
And it's the most recognized. It's at the Masters. It was on Sunday to get him. He eventually gets into that playoff. I was there on the grounds that day. I heard that roar.
I was there too. It was crazy. I mean, good Lord.
Crazy. So it was more just the iconic scenario. I agree. I mean, it's, I don't think it's a hot take at all to say it wasn't the most difficult shot. It was not. But also it's like the iconic Nike moment where that thing just, that camera just picking up that logo just right, hanging on the lip, like the drama of it all was is unrivaled.
Yeah.
I figured that's where you would go with if you had the first pick.
Vern's call on that too. Just
great.
All right. I'll go next.
20 years later, Vern sticking his hand out of the tree, right?
Full circle. All right. Next one. I'll go. Let's see. I'll go 2008. I think that's the next best iconic moment. Maybe, I mean, just everything with it. The putt on 18 to force the playoff versus Rocco. I mean, the pressure, the circumstances, he's on his broken leg, just all of that combined. And then he makes that putt to force the playoff, goes on, wins. We'll go that number two.
Yeah, I mean, the broken leg drama of that, was at Torrey. Was that at Torrey?
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely memorable. Yeah, you know, when you look back at it, you're like, God, Tiger beat up on a bunch of just freaking, CPAs. No offense to Pat's dad. I mean, it was just unbelievable. As I was thinking back to these clips, you know, if we're thinking through Tiger's best shots ever, like I kind of like the shots. Like,
yeah,
that's what's tough. The 2000 U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, when he's in that rough off the tee, going straight up the hill, cutting the corner, and he muscles it up to the front of that green, and the ball trickles onto the green to that front flag location. And the announcer says, and that's what strength will do for you. And I think that's when, like, him hitting shots like that, maybe it wasn't that exact moment, but that at 2000, when he's doing what he's doing, that's about the time people are starting to figure out, maybe I shouldn't look like Homer fucking Simpson and play professional golf. You know, like, maybe I should get in the gym and do a sit-up or maybe do a squat or, you know, something. And Tiger could just do shit that nobody else could do, you know, and he's taking that line and he's setting up that ball and they're like, nobody else in the field, co-anchor fat ass would ever consider trying to muscle out this shot out of the rough up the hill into the wind, you know, thick air, like everything was against him and he did it. And then people were like, okay, this is what we're up against. And now they, you know, most of them look like that. It's just like an example of how he just changed so much about golf as we see it today.
Okay. It's back to me.
Yep. Yes. Snake draft.
I'm going to go with the 2002 PGA. Second shot from the bunker, bad lie, bad footing, over the tree, works around to go look at it. Just thinking about how in the world I would hit that shot, or like how many times it would take for me to come close to hitting that same shot, how difficult that shot, the level of difficulty to me, just again is putting Tiger on display as just being a different cat, literally. And nobody else in that era could hit that. I think now there are a lot of guys that could hit it, but nobody could hit it then. So
I like that. Do you mean like you thinking about you hitting that shot into the trees? Because that's...
Well, see, Tony, you don't know this about me. I do hit it high. I can hit it high. I can hit it high. I mean, I can hit it high, but like the lie in the bunker, the awkward lie, the whole gumbo of that shot would just be so hard to do.
A lot of factors going into that.
I need a large bucket in the bunker and just let me keep whacking away at it. See what I can do.
All right, I'll go next up. I'm going the ace at the Phoenix Open 1997. I just love everything about that clip. Again, calling back to last week, it's all the highlights on YouTube are, it's all standard definition, the baggy clothes. There's no grandstands. It's not what the, you know, the waist.
That's what kind of got me. Like when I was thinking, looking back at that one, I was like, I don't know. It takes away for it. It loses some juice.
I like
clothes.
No. The lack of like grandstands and the
stadium.
Yeah. Like I'm just so, baggy clothes.
I don't think, cause you're a clothes guy. Like the baggy clothes could throw you off.
No, that wasn't it.
All right. I like that one.
I like everything about that clip. So that's what I'll go there.
All right, I'm like DB. I'm a golf shot person too. Like the ones that are just like, there's just very few people can pull off. And it's not the biggest golf tournament in the world. It is in Canada, but the 2000 Canadian Open shot out of the bunker was a really one. That's one I could watch over and over. Just an amazing, amazing shot. So I'll go with that one.
Not a bad pick.
Turn it around. I'll go with I wanted to kind of go waste management. There's two putts that I could go with here. I'll go with 17 at the Players. I'll go with 17 at the Players.
Better than most.
Mm-hmm.
Better than
it
most.
Gets overplayed a little bit. Kind of annoys me, but it is a great moment also. So
another good moment. All right, Tony,
I'll wrap up my picks. I'll go to the 2000 PGA Championship. I'm excited for the PGA next week with Valhalla. I don't remember much about it from these, you know, the past couple times that they've played it there. So I'm excited to just see the course. But again, everything about that clip, the pressure, it's on the first playoff hole, and then Tiger running, pointing, the swagginess of that. Again, you've got the picture of Tiger there doing that, the eccentrics, all of that coupled with pudgy white Bob May. I think the compare and the contrast there is very cool. So I'll go with that PGA in 2000.
So you've got Rocco and Bob May on your roster.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about that is that I was actually on the way here to record. They had an interview with Bob May on the radio. And he said of the whole day, of his battle with Tiger in this iconic battle, the one thing that threw him off and actually threw Tiger off was this was the first year that they did the three-hole playoff. And when he got done after 18, they were like,
did he go to the tower?
No. They were thinking they were going to play 18 again. And so when they told Bob May that he had to play 16, 17, and 18, it totally threw him off of all of that. I thought that was crazy to me. And of course, Tiger birdied the first hole.
So funny to me that Pat is so anti-YouTube golf, but every week we get his PGA Tour radio update of the week. I'm glad you left this one for me because I think this is a great pick. In fact, if you're watching on YouTube and you're seeing the clips of these or whatever, hit the like button, comment which one of us drafted the better three shots here. I think it's hands down me now that this has been left over. Subscribe to the video channel if you haven't already. Thanks to our friends at Swanee. Shout them out. TJ 25 for 25% off your entire order. Click the link in the description if you want to get some of that. But the 2000, Tony, when you started to say 2000, I was like, no. The 2000 WGC shot in the dark.
Yeah.
That was crazy. He couldn't see his ball. He said, in the post-game interview, he says, I had to bend real close to the ball just to see that my lie was okay. Mm-hmm. And then he said, I took some practice swings to feel how the turf interaction was to know whether or not this ball might jump on me or how it was going to come out of there. It's dark AF. The announcers can't see anything. He hits it over a tree. And I mean, this ball, it's in the air, and the announcers are like, well, we think it might be good. I mean, because, you know, Tiger hit it. Like, right? It's supposed to be good. And he freaking almost flies it in the hole, lands it to like a foot ball game for that WGC. Pretty crazy shot there. Like, that was Tiger. Like, that shot was unbelievable.
See, I like that pick, DB. I was going to go with that until I read earlier. He won that event by 11 shots.
Yeah. That was the only thing I was thinking was he did. Like, it was not like he could have just hit his putter up there.
Yeah, but he didn't. He didn't. I mean, it doesn't take away that he still hit the shot.
Still a great shot.
It was a good shot.
But yeah, I mean, obviously he did not have anything to lose.
Yeah.
He could have shanked it into then retired Bob May's drink and on the outside the ropes and still been fine. All right, good stuff, gents. Good stuff, good draft. Thanks to producer Tony for putting together another good bump and run show. We got the PGA Championship coming up next week. Pumped about that. Be sure you check out all the content. I'll be dropping a course breakdown video on Valhalla, you know, or as they got in the pro shop, you know, in Valhalla, they got those big letter hats. Halla, H-A-L-L-A. Those are big right now. We need to get Pat one of those.
Don't forget, set your alarms, guys. The Michael Block story. Debuting on Paramount Plus, I think on Sunday.
You know what? I have a Paramount Plus subscription. I'm canceling it.
I'll get out. Yeah, I'm not. That's not appointment viewing for me.
No, not at all. But anyway, yeah, a lot of PGA Championship content. We're going to do the betting show on Sunday, which is Mother's Day. Shout out to the moms. Make sure you take care of your moms and your wives and your grandmas and all that good stuff. Have a great week. We'll see you next week. See you. Out.
Block.
Block.
Michael Block's Miracle in May.
That is not what it's called.